Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today we're joined by Dean Henderson on the Galactic Club. He's the author of 5 books, the latest of which is The Illuminati and Agenda 21. And we're very grateful to have you here today, Dean, as we see what you see with what's taking place here on planet Earth. We want to share it with other people as we support the all-natural environment that supports us. So, then you could introduce yourself a little bit, Dean, you know, how you came to do what you do, and you know, a little bit of background before we ask you a couple questions. That'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. And so, I guess, I started out just kind of average dude. Grew up on a farm and South Dakota, Midwest, and, my dad always imparted a sense of justice in me, and I guess that really, I didn't really realize that influence until way down the road, and so along the way, you take some college courses, have some good professors, meet some, aware people at college, because, I kind of grew up just like a jock, and I showed cattle, and I was a farm boy, and small town, pretty sheltered from the big world and how it runs. But I always had a really sense of justice, in second grade. I remember beating up this bully that was picking on other kids, and so, I don't know. It's just like some of that's just, I think it's parenting is a lot of it. Some can't be overstressed enough. Like a lot of people just don't get enough love when they're kids, They don't have the parents that teach them morals and like right and wrong, and they teach them to bow down to authority instead of like helping the weak. And my dad taught me just the opposite, and he stood up to authority and taught me to help the weak people and hang out with them. And so go to college, meet some aware people, and start protesting against the Israeli occupation in Palestine way back in 1983, and against apartheid, which was going on then, and went to Nicaragua and this Witness for Peace mission, in which we protested that Contra war a lot, and then I went down there and then find out, that these Contras are just getting paid with heroin injections and they're just a bunch of terrorists, and which we kind of already knew, but just didn't really realize how brutal they were and that they were just really actually trying to terrorize the shit out of people and target the infrastructure of the country, farms, the food, the water, the mining of Corinto Harbor, the biggest harbor in the for the country, and undermine the revolution, undermine the Sandinista revolution, which was all about taking back the country from this one family, the Somoza family, that controlled like 52% of the arable land, So that sprang out of liberation theology, which is something a lot of people don't know about. It's a Catholic thing, and it's the good part of the Catholic Church, where, they decided the Medellin II Convention in Bogota, Colombia in like 68 that they wanted to side with the poor instead of the rich. And so this liberation theology has really spread around Latin America especially, but also in the Philippines and other places, and inspired people to have revolutions against the oligarchy. And so, there's all that stuff. And then I just traveled a lot, and I took off and I went to India just on my own with very little money. And I just, vagabonded around the world. And you kind of see the same corporations, and kind of like in India, it's the Tata and the Birla families, these two families that just lord over everybody there. And then they plug into the corporations and the banks and Union Carbide and Bhopal, and you just start connecting all the dots. And so then I came back and went to grad school. I got a master's in environmental studies at University of Montana, and we raised a lot of hell there. We had a zine called Missoula Paper. FBI was calling me up, harassing me all the time and whatever. And so I got my master's. I did a thing about the oil companies and what they were doing as far as the Gulf War and why that was happening, who was making money from the first Gulf War in 1990. And I wrote a thesis, and it was a about how the basically the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, UAE, Oman, you know, Kuwait, are all basically subservient to the wishes of the banking empire located in the city of London and with tentacles politically in Washington and militarily. And I just wrote that thesis as 144 pages, and then I could have had it published as a book right then, but I wasn't satisfied. There was just something missing. And so then I traveled some more. I've been to 50 countries and read the newspapers, read the books, studied more, got into the secret societies more, got into the drug trafficking, arms trafficking even more, and just it's really ugly. And anyway, I came up with this first book, which is Big Owner Bankers. It's, I don't know, 450 pages or something, over 900 footnotes. Everything I know, really, about how it works. And it's how it works is the private central banks are owned by a few families, literally, and then they own the arms companies, they own the rebuilding companies like Bechtel and Halliburton, they run the drugs, the illicit drugs, they also run the pharmaceutical legal drugs, they run everything, they own everything, they own the whole Fortune 500, the whole stock exchange here, your stock exchange, Auckland, Wellington, where it is. And the one in Sydney, and the one in London, and the one in everywhere. And so they own all of it. And it's so weird, people can't get their arms around it. And then you find out they're really freaky, and they call themselves the Illuminati, their word, not mine. And they consider themselves to be the illuminated ones, and we're just a bunch of basically batteries or sheeple or just to be herded around and taught to consume, taught to be wage slaves, taught to be serfs in their little accumulation pyramid. And there are also Satanists and Luciferians, and that's kind of what this latest book's about. It's more of the spiritual aspect, because it's a spiritual war right now. They've declared it on us. You can see it everywhere. People are literally turning evil. I mean, just average people now are buying into it, because it's out in the open now, and they're really pushing for this agenda, and they have to get, you know, people on their side. And unfortunately, you see it where a lot of people are, not everybody, people listen to the show won't be, you and I won't be, there's also resistance, that's us. But it is a spiritual war, and we better take it seriously just like that, and we better put our boots on and start fighting back at every level against these people, because this is the end game right here, you know.
Yeah, that's great, Dean. Thanks for sharing. We see that, you know, it makes sense to support the all-natural environment that supports us, and I noticed that in your latest book you talk about how, you know, the animals and nature, various species and plants and everything, they all support each other, support the environment that supports them, and then indigenous peoples too, and you compare that to, you know, the Agenda 21 and what the elite families have kind of got people agreeing to in, you know, on the planet Earth today. You think you could talk about that a bit and how they implemented their ideas onto people?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right. That's reality. What you just described is reality. That's what God or Creator or Wakantanka or, you know, whatever you want to call it, the good force, that's what created the whole thing, and that's why the animals and the indigenous people behaved accordingly. They understood that greed doesn't get you anywhere. They understood that giving in the end is what brings you gifts, that if you just are a taker your life will be miserable and you won't get anything, and people will start taking from you. And but they don't, these people are detached from that. They're not only detached from it, they're in open rebellion against it. It may go all the way back to the Canaanite faction where Cain killed Abel, and, you know, this was the bad faction. And immediately the Greeks sort of interpreted the Bible wrong, and they said this serpent knowledge was good, and when it's actually bad. And we just went astray out of that Garden of Eden, straight out of it. See, and were we forced out of it? Yeah, most of us were. Most of it wasn't our fault. And of course, they want to invert that logic too and say, no, it is your fault. It's all your fault. You have original sin. You're terrible. And meanwhile, these elite hide behind that, and they're the ones that are doing all the damage. They're the ones that have all the blood on their hands. They're the ones that have destroyed the environment. And you and me are supposed to feel guilty about whether we chose a paper or a plastic bag. And you and me are supposed to feel guilty about every little thing we do. And that needs to stop, and that's just insidious among the environmental movement. It's not radical enough, you see, to be that way, because it's a form of self-hatred. And ultimately what they're doing to us is they're making us hate ourselves, because they're telling us to act a certain way, like little capitalists and be takers instead of givers. It doesn't work out for us, then we get frustrated. And then, you know, things go bad for us and we don't understand why. And then, so then we start hating ourselves, you know, because we took the wrong path. And we're like, you know, we're not taking responsibility. We're not stepping up. We're not saying, look, I took the wrong path. I need to go back and correct that. But just go back and correct it. You don't have to hate yourself. Just correct it. Correct your actions. And realize that everything that's going on is not your fault. Everything that's going on is this small handful of global elite who are pushing this idea. And they do it real insidiously. It's not like Orwell, where you just would see it, you know, and there'd be little signs in the factory and you'd be slaves and it'd say, you know, consume, watch TV. It's not like that. It's more insidious because it's messaging on TV. It's messaging on the internet. You know, it's messaging. Pretty soon your friends and family start talking this way because they have internalized what the media wants them to believe. Not just think, but believe as like their moral compass. You know, and all the sitcoms where you have to get one over on somebody before they get one over on you, and all the debasement of human beings, you know, with just like, you know, glorification of stars and glorification of the human body, this over-sexualization of everything that's going on right now, and we're just supposed to be these things that eat and fuck and consume, and we don't have a soul. And that's the message, you know, that's what they want you to internalize. And once they've done that to us, then we lose our power. We give away our power because they don't really have power. They have authority. They have false authority that we've given them, by hating ourselves and not going after them, not directing our anger outwardly and going after these people and exposing them like hardcore and with bravery, like it's serious business. We spend all this time mulling and miserable about ourselves or our situation, our friendships, our marriages, our, you know, just everything. And it's just, they just create this internecine squabble. But the base of it is like self-hatred. And again, it's this knowledge that's deep, deep down inside of each of us that will never go away. It's always going to be there. And it's telling you, you should give, you should cooperate, you should try to get along with people, you should be the first to step up and do something nice, not wait for the next person to do something nice, and then you'll do something nice. And that's not the natural way. That's their way. Our way is to be proactive and do like Lakota, where, you know, at the giveaway ceremony, I've seen, you know, where a guy will come in and give a brand new pickup away to a 8-year-old girl, and he'll just walk away, and he won't want any credit or even to know who did it. And that's the way we are, naturally, and that's what you see in nature. But what you see with these people and what they're telling us to be is just the opposite of that. And it is satanic, it's Luciferian, it's upside-down, inverted reality. You know, like Peter Tosh said, everything they do upside down, and that's what he means. And that's why Peter Tosh inspired, and Ritz Rega inspired, literally inspired a revolution in Jamaica, and not just Jamaica, but Zimbabwe and Mozambique and other countries, just with the messaging of their music. Just by telling the truth. The truth is very powerful, but the truth is a very rare commodity right now. And that's what we're having to defend because, I mean, things are getting the lies are getting bigger. I mean, you watch what's going on in the you know, if you watch the politics or the media and you just see the lies just get bigger and the rationalizations get bigger and the denial gets bigger, the denial of the truth. And running away from it, and pretty soon the little lies just get bigger, and that really does have kind of a demonic effect on people, you know, when they're just, they can't take responsibility for their own actions. And it's just, that's why I'm an anarchist, because that just means taking responsibility for your own actions. But I'd just be really nice if everyone would do that, you know, take responsibility for their own actions. And that's what animals do. They suck it up, they buck it up, they help the other. They go out of their way to help the other. They raise their babies. They keep an eye on their families. They do all that, but they're really just destroying the natural way, and they're attacking the natural order of things, and that's what they're doing. And they've got a lot of people buying into it now more than ever. So we're just at a very critical time, and people just need to really, you know, step away from the media, step away from the electronic devices, especially, which I think are also having some kind of physiological deal where, I don't know, you know, it's some kind of dark matter coming out of these computers from CERN where they're literally pushing that on us, and I don't know, it's just a weird time, but this is 20 years old, this technology, the internet, you know, and this, I've just seen it go downhill really fast because I'm 53, so I was around before the internet. I wrote my thesis when there was no internet. Imagine that. I bet you can't even imagine that. I mean, young kids can't even imagine, like, researching a book without the internet, or researching an article, or researching a thesis. They can't even imagine that. And that's the problem, too, is that people are losing faith in their own skills, which are like the old ways, you know. They're losing faith, like, can I really start a fire if I need to? Yeah, you're damn right you can. You know you can. But the internet makes you doubt that, because the man didn't tell you you could, or the man on Jeeves, or the man on Snopes, or the man on Wikipedia. It's all the man telling you, no, do it like this. And half the time they're trying to kill us with bad information and bad advice, you know, and you're just going to trust the man? But see, this is the problem. You never trust the man. You just trust yourself, and you trust your God, and you trust what your parents taught you, and your values, and what the old indigenous cultures have taught us, the ancients have taught us, and the animals teach us. And instead, people are really, it is idolatry in its pure form, where they're idolatizing sort of the technology, the God of technology. And this tells us everything. But see, the man is always talking through that. And yeah, we can make a dent in it once in a while with, you know, these talks on the internet and stuff, and that's great. And we use it like Aikido or Jiu-Jitsu, like you use the enemy's weapon against him. You steal it from him and you use it against him. And that's what I do with the technology. But I'm also very aware that this technology is driving this kind of, you know, herd mentality. This kind of, it's like the Borg, you know. It's like you can be this or that, and that's what you can be. You can talk about this or that, but that's the only two things. You can have this opinion or that, but that's it. And it just, it is sort of the narrowing of the mind and really the corrosion of the soul. And that's even more frightening. Not to mention the physiological cancers and that kind of thing that's going on, the destruction of our health that's going on with it. The chemtrails is a part of the technology because it, you know, the strontium, barium, aluminum they're dropping is making us more conductive to this Internet of Things they're working on, this 5G. So it's all connected, and we've taken the bait and we've been captured by the internet. In their net. That's the way I look at it, really. And it's not going to end good. It's not going to be the thing that saves us. What's going to save us is getting out in the streets again, getting behind the barricades again, you know, getting revolutionary in our thinking. More than anything, it's having the audacity to be a revolutionary and not accept that, oh, somehow voting is going to solve it. Really, voting is going to solve it. Voting's not, we're past that. It's over. They own everything. They own all the parties everywhere. Forget about it. We're going to have to agitate. We're going to have to quit buying their crap. We're going to have to quit working for the man for slave wages. If we do, we demand double the wage. And we're going to have to just do a general strike. I mean, there's going to have to be some really militant, radical, revolutionary actions. That's the only way we're going to get out of this. And for that to happen, there has to be an awareness first of the gravity of the situation. And the gravity of the situation is that this is the end game. And 5G, when that comes in, that represents the eye of the Illuminati watching you everywhere you go, monitoring you everywhere you go, planting thoughts in your head, which I think they're already doing with the computers. I don't know how they do it, but they're doing it. I can tell. People are going nuts. Look around you. And you know, it's serious. It's really serious time. And so people better get their boots on it. It's a war. And I'm asking for soldiers. I'm not the boss here. I'm subcommandante, whatever. But I'm just saying we all need to put our boots on and treat it like it's a war and quit messing around and quit talking about trivial crap that doesn't matter. And I mean everywhere you go, not just on an interview like this. I mean everywhere you go, you need to start trying to agitate and making people aware. And they're not going to like it. They're going to say you're crazy. You know how it is. They're going to say you're nuts. They're going to try to shut you up. I don't care. It's time for truth. It's time to respond to this war that they have declared on us. And there's just a few of them. And so all we got to do is just make people aware of it, and we can go get these guys however we want to handle it. But, you know, we got to get through the lies, and we got to get people to appreciate the gravity of the situation. And so, I don't know, that's kind of what I'm just dedicating my life to anyway.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for sharing, Dean. Yeah, we see that it's up to everyone to decide their life and to see what's really taking place and wake up here. We're also aware of what's happening with the EMS and the controlling through, you know, like the, we call it artificial intelligence, they're using the chemtrails and different frequencies. We actually talked about that a lot last week on our show with Adrian. He's very aware of how that all happens with the bots and the AI. I've got a couple of co-hosts here with me I forgot to mention earlier on the East Coast, Eric and Mary. I think Eric had a question for you.
Yes, hello, Dean. Nice to meet you. Yes, I had a question. I heard you briefly mention CERN when you were talking about technology. I was hoping you could go over that, maybe explain that to some people who don't know, some people listening who don't know what CERN is.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's this thing in the border of, what is it, France and Switzerland. I guess it's mostly in Switzerland, and it's this particle collider that they built in not even sure what the acronym stands for. I'm sure you can Google it, and the God Google will tell you. But bottom line is it has to do with, again, the arrogance of these Luciferians that, you know, they can somehow, they can split what they call the God particle. And, you know, they got to this point in physics where, you know, they thought they had it all figured out with the protons and the neutrons and, you know, the atoms, and it was all spoon-fed to them by the City of London scientists, the Royal Geographic Society, Tavistock Institute, the fake science that passes for real science, when, you know, in fact, the new science, that's the, you know, quantum physics is definitely where it's at and more accurate, and that's a good thing. But CERN, I think, comes down to just arrogance, where they're, you know, they're trying to now, they found the, you know, so anyway, you have protons and neutrons, they move a predictable pattern, you think you got it figured out, so you can, everything that, you know, becomes objectified or objective, and so a monkey, you know, we're going to do a test on him, and he does this, and even though he's in a lab in New York, somehow that's supposed to come out the same way it would have in the jungle, and therefore monkeys do this, you know. And it's just nonsense, you know, it's just total nonsense. It's ignorance, really, that way of thinking, that old science, led, again, by the Royal Geographic Society, this idea of might is right, social Darwinism, you know, all this crap that they're telling us, all these things, objectify everything, everything's objective. I mean, no, nothing's objective, everything's subjective, that's the nature of reality, and that's what they learned with the, you know, with this subatomic physics. When you get down below a proton, neutron, it all just kind of goes nuts, and things start moving in different directions, and you can't predict it. And now they're finding out things like, you know, a researcher actually has an effect on his experiment or her experiment depending on their vibe. So, like, if that researcher is sad, that'll affect the outcome of the experiment. If they're happy, that'll affect it in a different way. I mean, and this is the reality. So this is the reality that you know, exists, because 93% of the universe is energy and 7% is matter. So everywhere we go, we're projecting out this energy, and it's hidden, you know, because we've been dumbed down. We've lost our pineal gland, third eye ability to sense the energy. Some people haven't. Some people pick up on it right away. I can pick up a person's energy right away and know what they're all about right away. I really can, and some people can. But a lot of people can't, and they just, again, they didn't have the love from their parents, or they don't have the confidence on their own, and so they don't have that, I call it the bullshit meter. Like, your pineal gland is your bullshit meter. You know, so some snake oil guy comes by and tries to, you know, pull a wool over your eyes. If you have a healthy pineal gland, you know, you're going to see it. But anyway, going back to CERN, so what they're trying to do is they're trying to take this subatomic physics, and they're trying to kind of debunk that or try to prove that, because they want to prove everything in a certain way, even though all their proofs so far have been totally invalid and false and erroneous. And so now they're going to try to split these smaller particles and see what happens. And they call them the God particles. And what they mean is, yeah, they're God because God, you know, we can't, it's not science anymore. You know, it's kind of, you can't, if you can't predict it, then, well, guess what? That kind of shoots a lot of stuff in the foot that you've been doing and funding. And this is kind of this scientific dictatorship crowd. And I guess there's a statue of Shiva out front of it, the destroyer, Shiva the destroyer. I guess some of the science, it's all really compartmentalized, so nobody knows what, like, other people are doing at CERN. It's like the CIA that way, or the NSA, and they don't talk to each other, and they're all doing different projects. So, of course, the people that work there are not evil, and they're, you know, they're just scientists, and, I mean, a lot of them are dumb, yeah, and they go along, and they think, actually, they're trying to do some good, but, you know, what's happening is, when they're doing these collisions, we're finding out, is that some of the scientists are actually, like, seeing demons. And some of the, and they're actually sort of releasing this dark matter into the universe with these collisions, and nobody really can understand what dark matter is, but it has to do with opening portals. And what it really is coming down to is, you know, and what it all comes down to is man's arrogance. And you can look at the example of, you know, out of the Garden of Eden, you know, eating the apple, taking a bite out of the apple. Look at the logo for Apple Computer. It's not just an apple, it's an apple with a bite out of it. And that means something to these Masons and these Illuminati, see, because everything they do is like symbolism. And so it's the arrogance of man. And right now they're flaunting the arrogance of man. So they really think they're going to split this particle and they're going to, I don't know what they think, control us with it, I suppose, or push their fascism down our throats a little harder, I suppose. But what they're going to do is they're going to destroy the world that they live on. And they're doing a good job of it right now with this Elon Musk crap and his space fence and just all this arrogance. And so, I mean, I have this great faith in nature, in reality, instead of virtual reality. And I don't just mean computer virtual reality. I mean virtual reality that these people have been trying to spend to us for decades and even centuries now. And so I have a great faith that if, you know, if they continue on this path, we're not going to go into some 5G robotic phase where everybody's controlled and all this. No, it's like the Aborigines say, this is one of the sticks and the rocks get thrown in the ground, and it's over. And the ancients will come back. This has happened many times before. It happened in the Great Flood. You know, Noah was part of the Sethites instead of the Canaanite branch. You know, and the Sethites were more hunting and gatherers. This was another son of Adam and Eve. You know, it's a metaphor. So, you know, take it what you want. But the Sethites, that was Noah. And then apparently Ham, Noah's son, married this Canaanite woman, and she was on the ark. And so she became this, like, infiltrator, and that became Athena in the Greek goddess. That's Athena, same one and the same, because the Greeks, again, took all this stuff out of the Bible and mistranslated it, misrepresented it, glorified Cain, and basically said Noah and the Sethites were just these simplistic, you know, people that wore animal skins and were unkempt. And, well, yeah, that's right, they were, and that's the way to be, and that's the way to live, and that's the natural way to live, and they were the good people. And God even said in Genesis, he said, in Genesis, it says the Sethites are God's chosen people and the Canaanites are human beings, you know, but not God's chosen people, just human beings. So it's all this stuff coming to a head, and the arrogance of these people with this particle collider, and now they've internalized it, I think, to the point where the demons maybe are in charge, even in this fourth dimension, just negativity, just power, control, it's authority, and this stuff's in charge. And so I have the great faith anyway that, you know, rather than going to this phase where we're all going to be slaves, like microchip slaves, no, it's not going to happen, because what's going to happen is God is going to destroy the whole thing. And, you know, if we don't wake up soon, and they're all going to be destroyed too. They can, you know, they can buy their underground shelters. They can buy their, you know, iodine tablets or, you know, whatever kind of crazy thing they think is going to protect them. But it's not. And so it, you know, all it is, in our, you know, from our point of view, as the humans who are getting screwed, and also, you know, for nature and trying to help, just the destruction of nature and destruction of old ways. And from our point of view, really, it's just about survival. I mean, it's not about do-gooder stuff even, although I hope it is. I mean, it should be. But it's more about just survival, because I don't think God's going to put up with this much longer. And I think that's why you're getting Kilauea volcano, and I think that's why you're getting the, you know, there may be a chemtrails aspect to the California fires, but it's also God, and he's tired of this shit. You know, really tired of this shit, and he's not going to put up with it much longer. So it's all kind of, you got to laugh at these people. I mean, in the end, you just have to laugh at how foolish they are and pity them because they're so, yeah, they're so stupid and they're drunk with their own power. They don't have any power. They don't even have any. They're all mostly just, they don't have any power. They think they have power, but it's not power. It's just authority. It's false authority. We have the power, and we all individually have the power if we embrace it, and that's the natural way. And so, you know, like, I've been dropped out of the city scene for a year, 25 years. I live in the country, back in the middle of nowhere, and that's why I do it, and just try to grow my food and burn my own wood and not, you know, not contribute to any of this evil system. And I've been doing that for 25 years. And, but, you know, that's the way I see it. And, you know, I really think that's the way it's going to come down. I don't think, you know, it's not going to be long. It's not going to, this stuff's not going to be tolerated much more by God or by nature. You could just look at it that way. If nature is your God, great. I mean, it kind of is to me. And it's not going to be, it's not going to tolerate it anymore. And we're all going to, you know, but there will be people that survive, and they're going to be the conscientious ones. That's the way God's always done it in the past, man. Nature's always done it in the past. Few people survive, you know, to get another chance, see if they can get it right this time. It's not the first time this has happened. It's the craziest, probably, just because of the technology. But then again, you never know.
Yeah, Mr. Dean, this is Mary. Nice to talk with you. Nice to have you here.
There is
a lot of deception and destruction going on that you see. And I was curious on what you thought of vaccinations for kids, if you thought they are appropriate or not.
No, man, that's just horrible stuff. We should have never, any of us, been vaccinated with anything. And people don't realize that there was no polio epidemic ever in the world until the polio vaccination came out. That there was no scarlet fever until that vaccination came out. None of this stuff existed. There was, you know, I'm sure there was isolated incidents of it. You know, people get sick, but it wasn't a problem on a mass scale. I mean, you look at Bill Gates right now. He's going around vaccinating the whole country, India, with polio vaccine. Well, there was no polio problem in India, and now there is. So it's just a moneymaker because they make billions of dollars on each vaccination. Geez, I mean, and the Rockefellers control 50% of the pharmaceutical industry. You know, whether it's Merck or Bayer, or which just bought Monsanto, or, you know, the old Nazi combine, the IG Farben, that's Bayer, BASF, Herxt. And so it's just a moneymaker and depopulation tool. And now, I mean, even when I was a kid, I think we had, I don't know, like 5 vaccinations. And, you know, now it's like these kids are getting like 27 vaccinations or something. And, I mean, they get vaccinated for Hep C, like right when they're born. And it's like, well, unless your baby was, you know, like a heroin addict or, you know, a very promiscuous baby, why the hell would you need to do that? And it's just crazy. So it's just a moneymaker. And people shouldn't vaccinate any. I don't vaccinate my pets. No way, nothing. I mean, last vaccination I got was yellow fever vaccination in Bolivia because you had to do it to enter the country. And sure enough, my wife got sick, you know. And could have been altitude sickness, but I think anyway it was the vaccination too, and combined with that, and that caused it. And I don't know. I'm never doing it again. I wouldn't do it if I was, I wouldn't. No, I just don't trust these people, and so it's just another scam. And but that's what they're going to do. And then pretty soon they're going to have, you know, adult vaccinations that are mandatory. I heard Italy's already doing that. And you know, of course, if you don't get the vaccinations, you're ostracized. You're a bad parent. And again, self-hatred. You're supposed to hate yourself. Anytime you stand up against the man, there's going to be a mob comes around. It could be your friends and family, and they're going to tell you how terrible you are, and you're supposed to hate yourself for standing up to the man. That's how weird times are, you know. That's why you need good friends and good family and people that love you and care about you. And because otherwise, if they're just these people that always respond to authority, they're not going to like you. And it could be somebody in your family, but it's conditioned. Just, oh, the authorities said we're supposed to vaccinate our kids, so... So you're evil for coming out and telling the truth and standing up to them, and it's you, and this is the inverted logic, and this is what they do. Every time they go after us and try to kill us, you know, it's our fault if we respond. It's our fault if we stand up to them. It's our fault if we tell the truth, and so it's so really twisted. But yeah, no, it's just part of the depopulation, and that's the same with the 5G, and the same with the electronic, the EMFs. And the same with the fluoride in the water systems, and the same with the GMO foods, same with the nuclear weapons. And again, you think about it, and it's like these Luciferians, they cannot accept, see that the universe is a whole thing. Like, it's a whole thing that operates interdependently. We're all interdependent on each other and on the whole thing. And they do not accept that because they take God's reality and they want to turn it upside down and invert it and, you know, sort of control it. And so they instead of doing, say, for example, nuclear fusion, which would bring us free energy and it would be clean and there wouldn't be any waste, and no, they do nuclear fission. So think about the symbology there. They're like splitting atom. Again, they're having to split reality, break apart reality, not a circle anymore, not a hole anymore. You know, no, not to these people. And that's what's happening to us now. And it's happening in each of our minds. And it's happening in our families. And it's happening in our communities. And it's happening in our states and our countries and in the world, where they're just continually trying to fragment us and tear us apart and tear reality apart. And so that's why it's so important for us to talk about unity and stitching it back together and not get into these internecine squabbles on Facebook with people that don't agree with us. And yeah, this is part of the agenda. I mean, that's why Facebook exists. It's to create this kind of climate. It's an anti-social media. That's what it is. All social media is actually anti-social, because media, in the word in Latin, means medium. So it's something that gets in between. So the mainstream media gets in between you and the truth. Social media gets between you and your actual social network, your actual real-life friends. Because you never see them anymore, you never call them anymore. You might text them and say three words to them. That's no way to communicate. You know what I mean? But it's like tearing apart our actual social fabric of in the real world. And then they call it social media, again, because they have to invert things and lie about everything. No, it's a Mossad intelligence operation. That's what Facebook is. It's designed to do just what it's been doing. And now you're going to see people like, yeah, they threw off Alex Jones. My stuff's constantly being blocked. It's not just the alt-right they're going after. I'm the alt-left, I guess, or whatever you want to call me. I don't really care. I don't really accept any labels. But, you know, I'm not Alex Jones. We disagree on a lot of stuff. But I still defend his right to say what he wants. And just like anybody has that right, because I want to unify people. And they want to divide us, and they want to fragment us. And so this is what they're doing. They let us use that stuff for a while for free, and we thought it was great, and it destroyed our families, and it destroyed our real friendships with so many people that we used to call more, that we used to hang out with more, whatever. And, you know, and now they've got us, and now they're going to take the cookies away, and they're going to sift through it. And the private corporation, not a government, but a private corporation is going to decide who has the right to say such things and who doesn't. Not even the government. It's not even a First Amendment thing, because the First Amendment is when the government curtails your free speech. We're talking about corporations deciding, the Ministry of Truth deciding who can say what. And if you don't comply, then you will not be able to say anything. And that's what it's going to end up, this whole Internet. They had to roll out a bunch of bait, and we took the bait. It was all this free stuff, free access to this, free information, free Facebook, free whatever. And now they're going to, like, sift through us and regulate us and, you know, say who can say what, decide what the truth is. The rest of us will be tossed out. And we're all going to be Palestinians. We're all Palestinians. That's what people don't get. It's like, you think it's bad? It's going to get worse. So you better start fighting for the Palestinians. You better start fighting for the people that got run over by the wagons when your ancestors came through and they happened to have red skin and they just ran over them and stole their land. You better start acknowledging these sins of your forefathers. You better start getting with the program, Holmes, and you better start standing up for what's right instead of bowing down to fucking authority.
Thank you, Dean. We actually have a caller. Are you there, caller? Would you like to ask Dean a question?
Sure. This is Val, and thanks, Dean, for all the information. I think you've got a good grasp on everything that's going on. You're very observant and you're aware. I'm kind of interested in the psychological aspect that people don't really see or mention a lot, and you cover that too, is the controllers taking people over, not by force, but by voluntarily giving up their agreements to the controllers through whatever, entertainment, you know, good life, religion, whatever they've got as bait out there. But that's a component that usually is not mentioned. So thanks for bringing that up. And then it is about agreement. It's like people giving up their power, like you say, or agreement to their own self-sufficiency. And one thing, though, is there is another way besides revolution. I mean, there things are getting gnarlier and gnarlier, but there another way of doing this is creating your own position, because the controllers created their position. They created it out of nothing, you know, and they took years and years, generations to create, like the Rothschilds, to create these things that are going on. So we can also create our own position. And because just fighting back, this is my perspective, fighting back is just going to, you know, they'll be, overtake and what they've done, but then they'll come back again. They'll just keep going round and round. So the creating your own position is in a way that's with awareness is another option. I just wanted to throw that in too. But thanks, Dean. You're great what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, and that's a really good point you're making. And I would just say that to me, that's part of the revolution, what you're talking about. It's the most important part of the revolution is the awareness. And, you know, revolution doesn't mean, you know, we're going to go out and clobber these guys with clubs or, you know, shoot them with guns. They got F-16s. They got stealth bombers. We're going to have a hard time at anything like that, okay? What I mean is, yeah, just basically defying authority. You know, there's a lot of things we can do. And it's not going to happen, though, like you said, until people are aware. And I like what you say about staking out your own position, because this is what we need. We need authenticity. Don't listen to anything I'm saying here today. Just, I mean, as far as I don't want you to follow me. I don't want to be your freaking guru. I don't want to be bowed down to. I don't want to be nothing. I just want people to think for themselves. I want them to have their very own way of looking at things, because that's where it's at. And you're your own person. And what you have to do is reclaim that, you know, you know, get out of the hive mentality where, oh, everybody has to do it this way or think that way. No, you can think however the hell you want to think, man, because God made you and you're special. Okay, so that's a really good point. And actually, I talk about it in my Sticking It to the Matrix book about how me and my wife was able to get out of the system. I didn't have a regular job now since I'm, you know, 27 years old, 53 now, I'm doing fine. And this is how I did it. This book tells how I did it. I staked out my own position. I was a street vendor for a while. I was an entrepreneur, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, think outside the box. You know, just because you're an environmentalist doesn't mean you have to starve. You know, just because you're, you know, you don't have to fall into these little, you know, just because you're a leftist doesn't mean you have to support transgender thing. I don't. You know, just because you're a righty doesn't mean you have to join the Ku Klux Klan either. I mean, what does that even mean? It's just like stake out your position, exactly what the caller said, and go out and make some money for yourself. You know, go out and be an entrepreneur. We need entrepreneurs. It's part of the revolution. I can tell you that when I went to Nicaragua in 1984, I never saw so many street vendors in my life. I never saw so much capitalism in my life where people actually felt empowered to go out and do stuff. Because they were encouraged to do it so by the government. And that's what a good revolutionary government will do. You know, it's not going to quash capitalism. It's going to encourage it. It's just another lie, because they funded the Bolshevik Revolution, the bad guys, the Kuhn Loebs, the Warburgs. And so what they were doing there is they were going to forever discredit the idea of capital or communism and socialism, because they created this state capitalism in the Soviet Union. Chase Manhattan was there in 1917, the year the revolution began. They opened up an office in Moscow, dude. So it was all fake, but it was all designed to destroy those words, communism and socialism, because they really don't want us going there. They don't want us sharing anything. That's what the Indians did, God forbid. That's what indigenous people did. They were communists. They shared stuff. Big deal. Woo-wee. Scary word, you know. Well, it's just like conspiracy theorists nowadays. You know, it's the same thing. They demonize and discredit that. Why? Because it's true. Because there are conspiracies. Of course there are. We're conspiring to have a conversation today. That's a conspiracy. Well, when Lord, you know, Walter Rothschild sits down with his bubba, and they have trillions of dollars, and they decide, well, we're going to, you know, take over the Congo today and take all the lithium. Well, that's a conspiracy too. It's just that they have $1 trillion, so it reverberates across the planet. And our conversation doesn't quite reverberate as far, but it's still a conspiracy. It's just the nature of reality. I mean, so again, it's like just have your own thoughts. Don't, you know, but like the caller said, yeah, go out, stake out your own position. Be an authentic human being. Do your own thing, man. Get out of this board. Get off your computer. Go out and have a real life, okay? Go travel. You know, go outside. Go, I don't know, go hang out with your friends, man. And yeah, it's going to get tough for the younger generation economically, and this is the thing that worries me because opportunities just aren't there. So here's the situation in the United States right now where we got everything, you know, inflation's kind of rearing up, and the employers right now are saying, well, we just can't find any good workers. Well, all that means is they're too greedy that they won't pay people more. And so this is an opportunity right now for young kids to just join unions, go on strike, demand better wages. Guess what? You're going to get it. You're going to get it. I guarantee you will. We had 3 teacher strikes in the U.S. in the last 4 months, and they all got big raises because the economy, there's no people. Yeah, and so pay us more. You young people, you need to demand higher pay for everything you do. And better yet, yeah, like the caller said, go outside of it and be an entrepreneur and do your own thing. And it is possible. And first thing you have to do is you have to get a handle on the debt situation and get rid of the credit cards. And I talk about all this in my Sticking It to the Matrix book, but you have to get out of debt. I mean, you just have to, and you have to stay out of debt, and you don't want to take their cookies. And I would say college now, I wouldn't even go because it's too expensive. You just got to make your way. I mean, I live on about $800 a month, but I got it to where, you know, I got my place paid for. I got no debt. It's different when you don't pay rent. But other thing, maybe move to the country. Maybe, you know, buy some land and really stake out your position. I mean, yeah, in the original version of things, I know people didn't own land and it was better. But guess what? They do now. And so you can't live like an Indian anymore. You can't hunt and gather. They'll just throw you off their land because they own it all. So maybe go out and buy a chunk of it. Buy 5 acres or 5 hectares. And hey, in Missouri, you can buy 5 acres of land for like $7,000 or something. I mean, go, you know, buy some land. Start building. Build a little shack to start with. Whatever. But don't go into debt. And you don't need a big old 10-bedroom house. Big mistake. Yeah, a lot of people make that mistake. They feel like, oh, because my parents will frown on me if I live in a shack in the woods for a while. Who cares? Who cares who frowns on you? It's your life. Nobody has control over you. It's your life, and every person gets to do what they want. But I'm just saying that's one way of getting out of the system. That's how I did it pretty much. I lived in a couple mobile homes. You know, I lived in some rough places for a while, but then eventually I'd improve those places. I'd sell them. I'd make a little money. If you hold them for 2 years, you can do that, no taxes. And in the U.S. anyway, Clinton passed that law. It's maybe the one good thing he did. And he passed a law where if you have property and you own it for 2 years, you can sell it. After 2 years, if it was your primary residence, you can move on and you won't have to pay capital gains. Well, so everything you make, you know, first place I made like $6,000 on this beat-up old trailer and 10 acres. But I made that, and then it goes in the bank. And then there's no debt because I don't need your debt. I don't even have a credit card now. I don't want their credit. I don't want their credit score. I rate them. I'm going to rate you. I'm going to hunt you. And I'm going to rate your credit score, you know, Mr. Citibank or whatever, because so you don't have no, you know. And so don't let them have that kind of false power over you by getting into their debt. That's the big one. And then you can have your own position. You can have your autonomy. You can also speak out freely, because even if you're not an entrepreneur and you have to work a job, well, it's different if you're working a job and you don't have a car payment and you don't have a house payment. But if you have those things, then it's like, holy shit, I got to keep my job, see? And see, this is one of the ways that they muzzle people and keep them quiet is keep them in debt and keep them in fear that, oh, man, I can't get fired, so I can't really say what's right at work, or I can't really tell the truth because, man, I might get fired, you know, because, yeah, the man's got control of all that stuff out there in the devil world, you know, of work and whatever, capitalism. And so we need to stake out our own positions is right, and that's power. That's taking your power back, and that's a tangible way to do it. And so that's a good question, and I think you have a good way of looking at it, caller.
Thank you, caller. I'd like to share something here, and everybody that's listening to what Dean is saying and to our show today. Well, we actually have a nonprofit that we have started here as a first step with the New Presentation Foundation. And it is worldwide. We're reaching people a step at a time worldwide. And we're planning on doing projects in Mexico as a start and then moving to other parts of the world. So for the young people this is an opportunity that we're creating to get together and actually make sense of our lives. There is another way than just going to college or getting the regular 9-to-5 job and becoming the slave to the system that totally destroys the creativity and the hardworking factor of the individual. Well, the possibility that we're creating is to join us in Mexico and plant trees and build these more natural types of buildings and work together, support each other like a community, like the natural environment does, like the trees and their underground network, like the fungi, like the animals and everything that it is they do. Well, we can do this, and we even have we can all become more aware together and support each other and just become super awesome instead of, like, turning into these machines like they want us to and just agreeing basically to the demise and the unawareness. A tsunami could come and take people out at any time, just like it did for Fukushima, but we can get prepared for anything that's coming and pay attention to the natural environment and, like, pay attention to our dreams, too. Like, you referenced Noah. Well, Noah was paying attention to his dreams, and that's why Noah saw what to do. He saw to build this ark for the survival of people, and he tried to tell other people, but basically they didn't listen. They mocked him, and they got swept away. Well, we're doing something, too, with an all-solar research vessel, and we need agreement. So it doesn't just happen. We need people to step up and see what's taking place on this planet, and it's like, here we are. There is a better choice. There is something that we can do. We can put our agreement into something wonderful that is actually a benefit for everyone instead of the destruction with, like, the vaccines and the public school and the GMOs. We can share something and demonstrate and present something wonderful. So I really appreciate your views and your passion, Dean, and you've written all these books and taken a lot of time in the way that you're living your life and sharing what you are. And I see you're on Facebook every day, and your wife looks like has written books too, which is awesome. You two are supporting each other in everything you're doing. And I'm just going to give it back to Henry, and I know we're getting into an hour here. If Henry wants to ask or say something else, then we can wrap it up.
Yeah, well stated.
Yeah, thanks, Dean. It's been cool having you on. And as we go out there and try to show people how to support the environment and support each other and do these wonderful things, I was hoping you could, you know, end by sharing a little bit about how you and your wife live there with the natural environment, maybe some of the challenges you're faced and the things that have worked for you. I see you've got some kind of an organic farm and things there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I think a big part of it is not spending money. And it's not cool. If you tell us it's not cool if you don't spend money. You know, you're cool if you spend money. That's every message on the TV and the internet's telling you that, man. What, you know, even if it's like some, you know, oh, it's a cool product. Like don't. I don't want you to find a book, steal one. If you can't, I'll borrow you one. I'll send you one, whatever. If you get the money, fine. But I'm not doing this to, you know, make money, okay? And so it's like money. Don't spend money. And so, like, for our garden, we never buy garden seeds. You know, we save our own garden seeds, and then my wife does a seed swap, and, you know, people that need this, they get this, and we always need a couple things, and we get that, and we just do it like that, and then we try to barter stuff, you know, whenever we can. Like, one time we had a lot of strawberries, so we were bartering strawberries for honey and chickens, and another time we had, like, this year I had a bunch of watermelons, so I traded some watermelons for some tomatoes, and you know, gardening is like that. And if you just don't spend money on it, then it's like, well, okay, if the deer get into your squash and eat a few like they did mine this year, it's no big deal, man. But it's just all, I mean, you get a lot of good food, and you get a lot of, you don't have to buy that crap at the store. And you know, it just feeds on itself. If you don't spend money, it starts feeding on itself. And pretty soon you don't spend hardly any money, and you realize, wow, money's really overrated. I don't really need a lot of that. But I'll tell you this, you do need a little bit. You need a little bit to start with to get you out. And this, again, this is in that one book. But It's all about, like, don't be afraid to take a job in Antarctica, man. Just look for crazy jobs. Like, one of the best paying, I think, now is that Antarctic one where you can go to the research station and, you know, live there over the winter, say, you know, when nobody wants to be there. And, you know, maybe it's like a $50 an hour job. Do it. You know, don't be afraid to go make a bunch of money. I mean, kind of how I did it here, that's how I did it. I mean, before I went to grad school, I went to Minneapolis. I was scraping asbestos out of schools, wearing a respirator and a suit, and, you know, okay, maybe kind of dangerous. I don't know. But anyway, it was like $25 an hour, plus a lot of good overtime, double time, you know, if you work weekends. So I just worked like 70 hours a week, and I knocked down like 10 grand in 2 months, and that's when I went to grad school. I may have saved 10 grand. You know, another time I did that, teaching English in Japan. That's another good option. One of my friends, after I did it, he did it, and he saved 40 grand in Taiwan, $40,000 cash, came home, bought himself a house in Omaha with cash. So you got to knock down, I call it in the book, the grub stake. You got to have a grub stake. And, you know, you can try to get grants, but it's hard because, man, the grant money thing is all sewed up with, you know, if you don't please the man, you're not going to get grants. I tried that early on with my writing stuff, my Missoula paper. It's like, no, they didn't want to give us any money because we were telling the truth. So they'll give you money if you're sort of, like, ineffective and, you know, save the fuzzy grizzly bear or something like that, but not really threaten the system, see. Then they'll give you money, and then they'll let you run with it and waste a lot of resources doing what? Not attacking the system, attacking a little component that's getting abused by the system or trying to defend it. And it will never happen if we don't attack the system itself. But so it's that combination of, you know, don't be ashamed to go out and make some money. There's nothing wrong with that. That's one of their lies that, like, if you're a good person, you have to live this monastic life of poverty or something, and it's just not cool to make money. Whatever, man. Go do what you got to do, okay? And so I'll just recommend that. Like, go out and... And that's how we got here, in other words. And you asked how we do it. Well, that's a big part of how we got here, was we were able to work it up to where we could come in here and buy this 42 acres for cash. And there's no debt. And taxes are really cheap in Missouri, you know, land property taxes. And that has to be a factor. Wherever you buy land, make sure the property taxes are cheap. And then I use a lot of hand tools. Like, you know, for 7 years I cut wood without a chainsaw. Okay, I had a maul and my body, and it really wasn't that hard. It's probably easier than using a chainsaw. Well, now I'm to the point this year where I got some tops, and I'm going to get a chainsaw. Okay, I'll go ahead and go to the machine age on that one. But for years, I didn't have a lawnmower. I just kind of, you know, I used a saw, and finally I got to the point, okay, it's a lot of lawn. I better get a lawnmower. So I got one. But it's like, to the extent that you don't buy even that stuff, that you don't need it. You know, what do you really need? See, it's about need and want. It's like that R.E.M. song. It's like, you know, what you want and what you need has been confused, been deceived. The final work song, you know, it's like, that's so true. Everything's confused. You know, we don't need much at all, do we? You know, and you know, if you want to start saving money, you just do the little things. Like, I went for years without a phone. I went for years without TV. I never had the internet until I moved to this place. And, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag about how great it's been, you know, honestly. But it costs money. Get rid of that stupid smartphone. You don't need that thing. I mean, those things are ridiculous expensive. So you got to get your bills down to nothing. And that's really the key. And, okay, yeah, we plant the gardens, and that's great. And I do cut the wood so I don't have any heat in the winter. And, you know, you do the little things like that. But it's really more about spending money is the key, not spending money. Because you don't need to make a lot of money if you learn how not to spend money. I mean, it sounds so simple. But that is the single most important thing to being a sustainable person and to being able to even have time to grow a garden or have time to you know, cut some wood or, you know, and not have to work. And then they take, what, half of that paycheck and taxes, and that's just usury. So, like, my wife and I, one thing we do is we live, like, voluntary poverty. We intentionally make less than $20,000 a year. Because if you do, according to the U.S. federal IRS tax code, you don't have to pay federal income tax. And then we don't ever work jobs, because if you work jobs, they take the money out of your check. But you got to get to that point, and that's where the grub stake is. You got to go down, knock some money out. They're going to take money out of your check. Okay, fine. Get to a certain level, you don't need much, but you do need some. And so it's almost like the people that are really poor are just as easily corruptible as really rich, because what do? They go around worshiping money all the time because they don't have any. you know, and the other people do it because they have too much. And then both of them have much time on their hands. It's like, get busy, you know, go knock down some cash and make some money, and then go live your dream. But you have to be realistic about it. Nobody's going to start raining money down. You're not going to win the lottery. You know, you might get a grant. Good luck. But it's not going to be enough, and they're going to want to tell you what to do. And so, again, I'm telling you, a lot of it, I can't overemphasize it enough, two things: get out of debt, stay out of debt, and then learn how not to spend money. Those two things are so important. It's the devil's currency, man, it is. It does cause a lot. But, again, go out and make some, too. You can't be dogmatic. You got to go make some money. Some money frees you. Some. Not very much, but some. Otherwise, you're going to be a slave the rest of your life, and that's what they want you to be. And that's what we want, because, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great, Dean. It's, like you said, you don't need much. We kind of focus on, like, clean water, clean air, and clean food is kind of the essentials to survive here. And then, yeah, I like how you also said you kind of barter and exchange and support the local community, and it supports you. That's pretty cool. And then with the with the monetary system and the internet, it's like we don't have to agree to it, but we just utilize it when it makes sense to try and create a benefit. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, we really appreciate everything you've shared. And if anyone wants to contact you, they can find you on Facebook, and your books are on Amazon and things. So that's really cool. And if anyone wants to, you have something.
Well, I just want to mention too, if you could subscribe to my blog for free. And I do like a weekly column, and I do interviews with different places. In fact, I would appreciate if you guys would just shoot me a link to this interview, and I'll post it on my blog, and then get some of my supporters your way, and realize that this show exists, because I'm sure a lot of them aren't aware of it. But if you just go to hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com, in the upper right-hand corner, hit subscribe, enter your email. People are having trouble because the CIA is always messing with me, and some people are getting this deleted URL thing. And if you do, just message me on Facebook or somewhere. Let me know, and I'll enter it myself. But you could subscribe for free that way, and all my books are there. But, yeah, they're also on Amazon. The easiest way, just Google my name, Dean Henderson. You'll see my blog. You'll see my books, everything. And I really appreciate you guys having me. And keep up doing what you're doing. And best of luck with just, you know, navigating your way through this crazy time, and stay strong, you know, and just keep your faith, man, not hope, but like faith, it's way deeper than hope, you know, and, you know, there is a force of good out there, and once you plug into it, things just start going better, you know, in your personal life, and even with the world going to hell, it's true that, you know, we don't have to accept it, and if we just have the faith, and I've seen it in my own life, it is karma. It's like, when you're living right, things start falling into place and working out. And when you're not, they go the other way, you know. So, again, thanks for having me. And you guys take care. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah,
thank you, Dean.
Right on.
Sorry, you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.